Hello, friends, and welcome to the second episode of a brand new Marvel Snap podcast, Snap Judgments. As always, I'm Roy Rogers, joined by my friends and yours now, Aaron Glazer and Chris Lavin. How are you two doing, my friends?
Everything is good, you know, not much changing. Everything's pretty much normal. I'm adjusting to a new bed purchase recently, so, you know, sleep is getting a little better as I get accustomed to that. So that's, you know, put me in a pretty good mood.
Is it like one of those like sleep mattress, like the super foam ones that they advertise on the television?
Yeah, it's actually with the adjustable frame, too.
Oh, wow.
So we went really fancy.
Yeah, bougie lifestyle there, Lavin.
Yep.
All right. Yep. So, Aaron, how are you doing? Clearly, none of us are doing as well as Chris and his partner. But how are you doing?
I should be on a beach with a Mai Tai right now, but I am still here in cold New York. So, c'est la vie. Let's talk some cards.
All right. So, how has snapping been going for y'all?
Pretty well. I've been on a grind the last couple days. Trying to actually do some rank grinding and playing at most two decks. So, which we can talk about a little bit, but that's the grind right now. Just trying to get some games. And I've played a lot the last 2 days.
So I was at level 50 yesterday morning and I'm at level 68 now. I like screwing ground and I'm not sure what the super benefit has of ranking up. Like, I guess like getting more pretty blue stuff so I can get more upgrades and more cards is nice. But since I hit 1,000 collection level, so I'm just getting bullshit from my collector's caches or whatever they're called nowadays. So I'm not really as like concerned with that. Although, again, I decided to like try and practice fundamentally snapping early if I'm ahead, and if I have, I've been playing largely Sarah decks, which we'll get to more of later. So I've been snapping early if I have Sarah, and once, like, and I have like anything else going, and then I've been retreating fairly liberally, and it's paid off. And to the tune of 18-ish levels in 2 days, I'll probably hit level 70 before bed tonight, just because like things have been going well enough. But we'll see how I feel about that pending sleepiness and so on.
Yeah, for me, I've been floating around the sort of middle ranks. I made a pretty decent push to sort of get out of the sort of scum ranks, and then I've been sick for most of this week. So like I've only really like had the ability to sort of play in short bursts. And I've just been focused on like getting my quest done, which is not always, particularly when they give the like win by 10 or more or 10 or less quest. That's not always asking for the most success in climbing the ladder if you're focused on getting those. So I've sort of like stalled out, but I have made massive collection progress. I'm like up to close to 800 now in collector's thing. And I also did five, not one, not two, not three, not four, but five Infinity Splits this week. So, and I got a sweet America Chavez variant out of it, which I'm currently in the process of working on. So I've been enjoying Snap on the collector's level a lot this week because I also bought like that cool Alex Medivh, like Jessica Jones art one. So that's sort of where I've been snapping.
Hey, Roy, what's an Infinity Split?
So Infinity Split is when you fully rank up your card. You know, you go from sort of the base card to rare or uncommon, rare. I don't know what the other ones are, but it's like it's the sixth level. And once you split it, you get the fully pretty, shiny version of the card. You get a lot. I think it's 8 collection points on your account. And is it? It's 10. It's 10. Oh, it's 10. Excuse me. It's 10 collection points. And then what's really cool is you either get a new, fancier version of the base card, or then there's a small chance you could just get a new variant of the card, right? So that also has slightly fancy sort of backgrounds. So, for example, when I split my America Chavez, I got a brand new, like, Jamie McKeevy art of America that I'm like, this is the only version of America I am going to be playing going forward. I'm like, yes, this is what I want. But she has a slightly better background than if you had bought her from the shop. And some of them are only available through the Infinite Splits as well. And then, when I split my Shang-Chi, I just got a slightly shinier Shang-Chi that I can level up and make look prettier, but it's still the core character art is still the same as the base card. So it's sort of the end point for sort of collecting a specific card. And, you know, many people argue that the sort of best way to build up your collection is either to upgrade a whole bunch of cards just a little bit, or upgrade one card or one set of cards over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. I have not been doing either of those efficiently because I like my cards looking shiny across the board. But that's definitely, you know, there's a lot of theory crafting for that you can check out on YouTube about what's the most efficient way to do that.
All right, so Chris is going to take us through. So the Steam client version of the deck is still in what's called beta? Open beta?
Early access.
Early access, thanks. I don't know words.
Even though you own a Steam Deck, you don't know the Steam
We're going to get to that Steam Deck. I don't know the Steam lingo. But whatever, it's in early access. So choosing decks, you can scroll through a few decks, but not quite choose from all of your decks, and it's wildly frustrating to play on Steam. Chris is going to walk us through how to choose decks.
Yeah, so I did some hunting online to find a solution to this. There had been a previous solution, which was before, if you changed if you removed the app from full screen on Steam, and then you could then change your deck normally. Then when you put it back into full screen, you're on your deck. That got patched out, and I don't know if it got patched out deliberately or accidentally, but it did. So now what you do is, and this will really only make sense to people who are playing on Steam, so my apologies for that. So you've got the location where it shows what deck you have currently chosen. When you click on that, it brings up the list of decks. Pull it towards whatever end the deck you want to play is on, if you've got a lot of them. So if it's one of your first decks, pull it, you know, as far left as you can, etc. Then you get out of that screen, or in the choosing a deck screen, rather, if the deck you're looking for is not on the screen, you just have to go with your mouse basically an equal distance to the left or right of that screen to select the deck. So let's say the deck furthest on the left is the third deck in your collection, but you want to play the first deck. You would move outside the box roughly to where the second deck was, and then again to where the first deck should be. You click on the space, it's just going to be dead air, but that will get you to the deck you want to play. Is it a pain? Yes. Is it clear? Absolutely not. But it works. So for the moment, that is the solution we are presented with.
That is a hell of a workaround. I only partially understood it, so I'm going to have to like experiment with it on Steam to do it. But thanks for explaining that, to Lavin.
I'll pull up my screen at some point and show you as well. It's weird.
You fundamentally click on the invisible spot where the deck would be, just off to the right or left. And like, even though it's just like the background of the game, it's like, oh yeah, the deck is obviously there. It's just overridden by the game, and you can choose another deck.
Great. Well, I am going to take us through a quick discussion. What are you thinking about the value of this month's season pass? We're about halfway through it, and so just to remind folks who may have just starting, the season pass contains, if you buy it, everybody has access to it, theoretically. But there's a certain level of free levels. Usually it's the credits that you get are free. So if you level up through it, you can get the credits that are in the season pass. But otherwise, to get all the other rewards, including the monthly card, you have to spend either $9.99, I believe, or for just the base, and then $14.99 for the accelerated pass. And the free card, the bonus card that comes with the pass this month is Black Panther. The Cost Wakanda Forever, great movie, you should go see it, is the big Disney release this month, the big Marvel release this month. Everything's themed around Wakanda Forever characters. And so, there's T'Challa art, there's, Nakia art, there's, and the end of the pass, which I don't think either of us are at level 50 yet, is a Black Panther variant. And so
I'm level 54 or so.
Oh, wow. Go Glazer. So you've already got the cool ancestral T'Challa variant. Cool. All right. But how have you? Well, Glazer, let's start with you because you finished the pass. How did you feel about the value as you made it through this year, this season?
So it gives you 900 gold, right? That's more than $10 worth of gold. Like, right immediately, so it's worth it. I don't care about variants. In, like, any given card game, variants mean very little to me, so whatever. But, like, you want to give me the sweet, sweet blue stuff that I always desperately need, and more gold in money than I put in, because I'd happily just throw $20 at this here and there to get extra gold anyway, so, like, just giving me gold for the money at equal value plus other stuff is 100% a great deal. So, I'm for it.
Yeah, from a fundamental perspective, if they don't change the valuation of what you get in the pass at this point, or going forward, rather, the passes are just worth it. Just flat out fundamental statement. It does not matter what the card is. The passes are worth it. Now, is Black Panther getting him into your pool a big thing? I would say, to answer that, you would have to answer a question for us, which is, do you play or do you want to play on revealed decks? If yes, then Black Panther can fit into them very nicely, particularly with Wong. If no, then he is of very little use. I have not been interested in playing on reveal lately, so I have not used much of Black Panther. But as Aaron said, the gold is worth it. They throw some boosters at you, which doesn't really matter, but they're there in case you really got hard up on a card to try and level up for your collection level. And the gold and credits is just worth it. Also, you can get, I'm just at about level 44, so I just unlocked the new card back that goes with the season. So it's a Wakanda-themed card back.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, as someone who does enjoy cosmetics, like I'm a dolphin in these kind of games, kind of thing where I'm willing to spend money on cosmetics if like I really love it. Like I said, I bought that Jessica Jones variant that was like bait for me. I'm trying to see where I'm in the season. I'm about 41 too at the season pass. I think there's one important caveat before I talk a little bit more about Black Panther and why I think specifically he's worth it. If you're interested, is as long as you think you're going to hit level 50, right? I think if you don't play Marvel Snap enough that you can't consistently hit level 50, I don't think on a pure value level, it's really worth it. Like, this is the thing I ran into when I was playing a lot of Arena is like, I wouldn't really grind enough to like max out my passes. So like I was increasing, particularly like as I decreasingly wasn't like really grinding every single day, like the pass was actually just not worth it. For me, unless I specifically wanted the cosmetics, like, so like, keep that in mind, like, don't get the FOMO. Like if you just want the card, you, of course you just spend it. But if you are like, I can, Black Panther or whoever it is, like probably like next month might be Ant-Man or something like that. If you're like, that's not really my thing. It's not necessarily worth it. You're not going to hit level 50, but I think Black Panther, I do think is worth the $10. If you, because he has two archetypes, right? He's good in the sort of Wong on reveal deck, but there's a whole combo deck built around the card, right? There's that Arlem Zola, like Black Panther deck that just only exists, and it's pretty good. Like, it can definitely steal games. I don't know how much you all have played against it, but I think in the mid tiers where I've been in, like, it's like a consistent, like, I would rank it as like one of the tier two decks that I play against, which, you know, with tier one being like Destroyer, and we'll get into some of this a little bit later in the episode, but I think it's definitely like Black Panther is a solid card, both as a role player in the sort of traditional on reveal decks, and he spawned an archetype that is solid and fun if you like the sort of steal a game kind of combo decks that Snap promotes.
All right, next up, very slowly loading, is my game currently. There is a Vibranium event. I want to pull up the Vibranium event info for us. The Vibranium event is kind of dumb, but it's basically just free stuff for playing the game enough. So it's not, like, terrible. But going until 11/28, so by the time you hear this, you should still have quite a few days to get on it. It is only on your phone. It is not accessible on the Steam version of the game. But it is, in your news, you'll see Vibranium Forge. Basically, for every game you play, you get a single Vibranium. Every 20 Vibranium, there are four items that are related to Wakanda, the movie Wakanda Forever. Every 40 games, i.e. 40 credits, you could forge one of those items specifically. There's still, like, a fail case. You can fail in doing so if you want. Like, it happens accidentally, you get refunded half of the Vibranium you put in. Every 20, you can get a random item. Each item you forge, not of the four, like, you can only, as far as I'm aware, have one of the four. It doesn't matter if you get, like, seven of Ironheart's helmets. You still only really count as one. You get 100 of the sweet, sweet blue at the end of the event. And if you get all four, you will also, at the end of the event, get a Pixel Ironheart avatar. In addition to getting one Vibranium per game by playing Ironheart, Nakia, Okoye, or Black Panther himself, if any of those are in your deck, you get two Vibranium per game instead of just one. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's if you play a lot, there's no real reason not to do this, right?
You do have to boot it up. If you don't boot it up at least once a day, yes, it erases your progress.
That's fair. So I've got all four items, and like, so I'm gonna get 400 free sweet blue drugs, and that's, I think, what I'm just gonna call it from now on, because that's what it is. And what's the real name for that? Somebody?
Credits.
Sweet blue drugs. So, and I'm gonna get a little avatar I'm never gonna use, because I'm gonna keep Cyclops until there's something I like more than Cyclops.
So, I'm going to take the role Glazer usually takes. This event is terrible. It is terrible. First of all, the biggest critique I have about the game, the one thing, is their notifications for events are terrible. They don't appear on the front screen usually. You have to go to the news tab. And as Aaron said, it doesn't appear on the Steam version. So I discovered the Vibranium event today. Because I had heard about it before that, but I never saw it in my game, so I didn't think about it. So today I was playing on the iPad, saw it. Great. It gives you a pixel variant if you hit all four. The pixel variants are almost universally awful. There are a few that are okay.
I don't mind them, but yeah.
They're bad.
Some of them are very bad.
So
some of them are so cute.
Like, I like the Electra one, for example.
But anyway, you get a bad variant. You get some credits, which is nice. Whatever. It's got MMO drops level of failure rates. Like,
that's
I went in today and I think I failed probably 10 rolls and succeeded on two in the first day of just random rolling. It's not good. And granted, it's free. You should do it if you have it on your phone or whatever. Fine. All well and good. It's free stuff. But if you were like me and didn't notice it, or if you're hearing this after the event and you missed it entirely, you did not miss out. It's fine.
Where I will, I agree with everything Lavin said, except for one thing, is not as bad as the Halloween event that they did that like week of Halloween, which I did not understand. Like, I didn't understand how it worked. It was like, you got to like pick a bunch of like random, like horrific characters and, I don't know, do some things. Like, it was, like, really confusing what the rewards were. I don't know. I was super confused by that event. It was too big brain for my small brain. I liked the Carnage versus Venom event. I mean, it wasn't, like, great, but its rewards were decent for you to check on it. And you're at least like, ooh, my line is slightly... I was randomly assigned to Carnage, my favorite Marvel character. And, which, that was sarcasm, just to be clear. And the rewards were decent, right, for checking on it, and you could help contribute to your side, right? So I think the events are getting worse as they go along. But I mean, like, anyone who's played these free-to-play games, like, these free bonus events are always, like, assigned to some intern who has, like, absolutely no resources. So, like, I'm not that surprised, so.
I'm going to speak for the cast for a moment on behalf of everybody. So you two are just signed on to this, whether you want to be or not. If your favorite Marvel character is Carnage, know that we are judging you.
Carnage is terrible. Full support.
So I thought I spoke together. We are judging you if your favorite character is Carnage. Sorry.
Oh man, so many Carnage t-shirts at comic book stores in the 90s. Anyway, old men comic book fan discussion is not really what this is about. But so let's jump into sort of the meat of today's episode, which is where we wanted to talk about, first and foremost, the three stages of Devil Dino. Glazer, what do you think? What are the three stages of Devil Dino? And sort of why is it so important to sort of the Marvel Snap metagame?
Well, I mean, the three stages are just, like, there's three pools of cards, right? So you can play Devil Dino since Devil Dino and Moon Girl show up in pool one in any of the three pools. In pools one and two, it's arguably the best deck. I think it's probably just straight up the very best deck in pool two. In pool one, like, there's nothing better than it, let's put it that way. There's things as good. Right, like Kazoo is probably better, but yeah. Like
I think Kazoo is better.
If not, if you see Moon Girl and Dino, right? Like if you see Moon Girl, then go Dino. Kazoo can't do a whole lot to that in pool one. I guess it can run Enchantress, but it doesn't, right? Like, because that would be bad for Kazoo, because Kazoo really needs ongoings. So, like, yeah, Kazoo's probably more consistent. Fine, it's the second best deck in pool one. So, like. We're going to take you through the pool one version, the key cards, and then there's like three good pool two versions because, again, the deck is very stupid. There's probably more than three, but there's three that I care to. And then we'll go over some pool three potential upgrades. There's like three or four different ways to upgrade the deck into pool three where it is no longer the meta, but it's still something perfectly capable of winning an awful lot of games.
It's still very popular in pool three. I run into it pretty consistently in pool three. So why don't we start at the bottom with pool one. So pool one, you actually get access to one of the things I think is really good about the Devil Dinos deck is that you do get access to like the core cards that really don't change in the deck, even into pool three. Right, you have access, of course, to both Devil Dino and Moon Girl, but you also get Sentinel, you get White Queen, and you get America Chavez, which are all cards that you're going to see in basically all Devil Dino shells for the entire game, which, you know, I think is a really good way of sort of guiding players to understand, and that the core play patterns that you develop playing this deck in pool one will carry you through pool two and pool three. I think it's different than sort of like Kazoo, which plays, I think, very differently in particularly once you get to pool three. Sort of, I think the same is true with like the on reveal decks in pool two. Like, I think Devil Dino is the most like the skills you develop in pool one translate to pool two and translate to pool three.
And as Glazer was saying, you're going to want to play it in pool two. Like, it may not be the only deck you play in pool two. You know, if you get antsy about just playing one deck all the time, as I do, you probably won't play it all the time, but it needs to be in your rotation in pool two. It's just super, super strong. I agree with Aaron that it's the best deck in pool two. and pool one, I mean, Aaron's the second best. I don't know. Kazoo is better. I think there's a legit argument to be made that On Reveal's better. But, you know, it's a good deck in pool one. It's fine play. It just sings in pool two. Pool three, I do think it drops off some. It's playable. But the raw power-wise, you start getting other options. And Dino presents a pretty linear threat pattern in pool three, and it's one that you've had two pools worth of experience playing against. So the biggest downside in pool three is everyone knows how to play against Devil Dino.
Wrong tab. Hi. So apparently when I change tabs, I cannot just hold the space bar. That's worth noting. Because I'm now randomly spacing on our document. My bad. All right. Ignore that giant space I just created. I'm unmuted. We'll be okay. So, like I was saying, in pool one, so you want to, you need Devil Dino, and you kind of need, there's only like three real draw cards. Sentinel, Moon Girl, and White Queen. You really, really would like them to make your Devil Dino decks work. The ideal play pattern is Moon Girl on four, that makes a copy of Devil Dino, then Devil Dino and Devil Dino twice. That works great. White Queen is perfectly fine in drawing you a card if you have Devil Dino but not Moon Girl. You fundamentally see Devil Dino for most decks. For most decks from the majority of the game, you're going to need to see one key card, right? Like, you can win without that key card, but you basically need one key card for almost every deck. I think that most Pool 1 Devil Dinos really, really, really want to run America Chavez to thin their decks because, like, they're running into such high power that if they don't see that Devil Dino combo, they're in a lot of trouble. Although White Queen can be an out. White Queen giving you, like, if you have Devil Dino, you can White Queen get something like a big Apocalypse they've been working on or an Odin or whatever, and then you can Devil Dino and then play that on White Queen again and, like, that works reasonably well. The rest of your deck is your standard, usually just your standard Bishop Angela tempo shell. That's how I prefer it. That does run Iron Man either way. You could also run it a completely different way, which I didn't run, but I've heard good things about, in an ongoing shell, where fundamentally you're running like the three cards that go in it, the Sentinel, Moon Girl, Devil Dino. And then you're just running a Spectrum ongoing deck out of that shell. Both seem effective. I generally, and like this followed me all the way to pool three, I'm still running Bishop Angela tempo stuff just because I think it's so strong. But that's the pool one version. We will, in the show notes, have a TLSG guide to this pool one version of the deck for you.
So I just want to say, I think talking a little bit about America is a good way to transition to the pool two thing. I think what America lets this deck grind a little bit, because sometimes you don't see Devil. I mean, the bad thing about America, right, is she does increase your chance of drawing Devil Dino every other turn, except for turn six. Right. And which is, you know, kind of annoying sometimes, but it does let you, there are turns with this deck that you go like, you know, Moon Girl into White Queen, and then you just need one other thing in these kind of like scrappy games, which do sometimes happen in Snap. And I think that's what kind of, I think, makes her like America really good in the sort of pool one and pool two versions of the deck. Because I think what separates Devil Dino from the other decks is no other deck in pool one and pool two has the same consistent end game that, and I think this is doubly true in pool two, right? There are single more powerful cards like Affininaut, right? Who is going to be, is in some versions of the pool two version of this deck. But the problem with Affininaut, right, is, you know, taking off turn five can sometimes just lose you the game, even if you're going to play a 20 strength in one lane, right? And Devil Dino, you know, you play him on turn five. And it still leaves your turn six to play in America, a second Devil Dino or several other cards. Or you can still play a Devil Dino on turn six with a one drop, right? And that can still be very consistent. So I think that's the thing. Like, there are more consistent endgames in pool three, which is why I think the deck's power level is a little lower once you get into pool three. But I think in pool two, there is no, it's really hard to go over the top of Devil Dino, which is, I think, what makes it so consistent.
So I'll use that to transition into pool two, where that's where I have played Devil Dino the most. It's where I've experienced Devil Dino the most. So there are a number of pool two cards that when you get them, you're just putting them into your deck, make room, find someone, something to take out. And it's in general Agent 13, who just draws you a card from the game as a whole. It's not specific. It's a card that wasn't in your deck. And then Cable lets you draw the bottom card from the opponent's deck. That goes straight in because not only does it replace itself, which is important in Devil Dino decks, but it will give you insight on what the opponent's playing potentially very early. So that's super handy. A number of decks also run the Collector, which is, he is one strength, but increases his strength each time you draw a card from somewhere that isn't your deck. Or that wasn't in your deck at the start. Like something like that. I don't remember the exact wording. It's something along those lines. The point is he gets bigger as you draw stuff from other places. So those are just going straight into pool two Devil Dinos. So then you've got a six card core most of the time that you're looking at. So what you do around that is an open question. And it really, in large part, depends on what cards you're hitting in pool two when you're hitting them. So the Sunspot Infinite combo is one that you can put straight in, two-card combo, because that helps. Having Sunspot in the deck helps mitigate what Roy was mentioning about the turn five taking it off. If your turn five is boosting your Sunspot from a one to a six, that's very different than just not doing anything at all. So I found that to be really helpful, even if Infinite honestly doesn't get played a lot of the time in that deck, in terms of played to the board, and that's fine. It's there in case the draws have led you to be stuck with, I need a big body, I don't have Devil Dino, what do I do? Another way to do it is with the Destroy template. So Carnage, Bucky Barnes, Nova, Deathlock, and Killmonger. Bucky's probably the piece there that when you see it will kind of change the dynamics of Destroy the most, because you've already got the Carnage eating people and the like, but when you get the Bucky, you're leaving a huge body in place afterwards, and that, even if it's just a two-card combo, playing Bucky into Carnage leaves you with, I believe, 10 strength in the lane. That's quite good for two cards, particularly on the low end of the cost curve. And then a third way you could do it would be to stick with, like, tempo cards. So Angela Bishop, and then add little control pieces or the like. So Scorpion or Okoye or Storm, always. Storm's just always pretty good to put in terms of locking down a location. If you're playing Storm, you probably want to add Jessica Jones as well. They are a pair that goes really well together. So I do recommend that if that's what you're looking at. Iceman's just a really good one-cost card. He might be the best one-cost card in Pool 1, Pool 2. I mean, you can debate if you'd like. I really like Iceman.
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler's the other, yeah, is the main competition.
Nightcrawler's also very good. The problems you have to be aware of, and I'll let the other guys talk more about this, is there are a couple tech cards that come in Pool 2 that can be a problem for you.
Spacing is acting funny. Whatever. I'm bad at this, guys. So, Enchantress and Shang-Chi are problems, right? Shang-Chi can be answered because I think most versions of this deck are running armor. And you can also just, if you're Moon Girling, like, Shang-Chi is one card and you'll have two Devil Dinos to jam. So that, like, helps too. But most versions are running armor because Sunspot is so good, and because you're running ones like, at first Mantis, and then later on, Sharon Carter, Agent 13, right? So, like, armor is really good at protecting from Shang-Chi. There's not really a good answer to Enchantress, but play around it.
Cosmo. Cosmo's pool,
oh, too. Oh, Cosmo's right? Not bad.
Yeah, I mean, Cosmo is busted in this deck, because there's no answer to Cosmo. Like, you can't, like, play an Enchantress to get rid of him. Like, if you, like, have a big Devil Dino and you play a Cosmo and you're like, all right, this is going to be my Devil Dino lane, like, that play is actually, I think, one of the single most annoying plays, like, to play against. It's like, I got this Enchantress in my hand, and your opponent plays a Cosmo. It's like, that's where the Dino's going. Like, okay, like, I got to give up that thing. Cosmo is very good in this deck.
That's super good, but, like, everything else in the deck is an armor reveal. Yeah. Right? Like, so, it's dangerous in that, like, you are risking your, like, 18 other on reveals. You should be able to play around that, right? Like, you have control over where you play the Cosmo. But the sheer number of times I've dropped a Cosmo and then been like, and now Green Goblin, mwahaha.
We've all been there.
Very dumb.
Yeah, I think in general, Cosmo goes well in a Sunspot lane with a Devil Dino following. Like, you've really hard committed to one lane. That lane is to, like, I'm just winning this lane. Let me figure out the other lane I'm going to try and win.
So, I really like the Infinite version with that kind of play. Because in one lane, you've got, like, locked up with Storm and hopefully Jessica Jones, right? Like, Storm, Jessica Jones have cleared one lane. If you can then Cosmo, like, if you've got a Sunspot chilling in that Infinite version, right? Like, you can skip five in a different lane. Cosmo, I guess that math wouldn't work. So it wouldn't be, it would have to be drop on five and then Devil Dino on six. But, like, it generally just works nicely. It's a nice way to protect Infinite in general.
Yeah, I think Cosmo, I think, is a very powerful card in the meta in general. I think it's a little underappreciated because there are currently, like, no answers to Cosmo, right? Like, you just can't answer the card, right? So I think the more experience you can get with playing with Cosmo and playing around Cosmo, I think is useful for your growth as a player. And I'm just going to say, I encounter a lot of these kind of, like, Devil Dino decks that are definitely in tier pool three playing Cosmo, because Cosmo has a lot of synergy with, like, many other, like, sort of top-end cards in pool three. But I think also you can build a pretty successful version of this deck in pool two with the card. Other thoughts about this
card? Spot to transition into talking about the pool three version of this deck.
Do we want to talk about the Jubilee version of this first? Because it is slightly different. Like, you know, you can see it's definitely more RNGesus take the wheel, the kind of deck of this. So you do, when you're playing Devil Dino with Jubilee, you do need to be a little bit more aware that Devil Dino could show up in places that don't end up actually working out well for him, and is much easier, I think, for your opponents to answer. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, more explosiveness of the sort of Jubilee versions. I wouldn't even call them tempo. I'd call them closer to, like, kind of combo. Because, like, you could just steal a lane and your opponent's like, oh, I can't do anything. Or it's like, oh, you put the Devil Dino on turn four, which gives me time to play my two extra turns to draw my Shang-Chi to blow it up. And I know now, since you didn't Moon Girl this Devil Dino, there's only one Devil Dino I have to worry about. And your top end might only, you know, there could be an Infinite or something like this. But it puts a sort of big target and takes a lot of flexibility out of the deck. So I think the Jubilee version of this deck really does need to be more aware that it's much more vulnerable to disruption, I think, than the other variants.
Yeah, I don't terribly like the Jubilee version of this deck. I think there's just too many pieces that can go wrong with it. So I feel like when you've got more consistent versions to play, the only reason to play a Jubilee version is if what you enjoy is really the high risk, high reward, high variance play style. And if you do, go nuts. Like, I'm not here to tell you not to. I just think if what you want is consistent results, I think the Jubilee version is probably the worst of the ones we've mentioned.
I also think there's just better versions of the Jubilee deck than the Dino version. So, because I love that card, Jubilee. So, anyway, so pool three, what do we think changes about this deck in sort of the top end of the metagame?
So there's several cards that really change it. There is, I believe it was a Hooglandia post, who many of our patrons are not huge fans of, but I think has really good ideas. That runs Ronin and Maximus to pull three cards. Maximus is a 3/7, which is crazy good stats. That draws two, and Ronin is a 5/3, I believe, who gets plus three strength for each card in the opponent's hand, which combos very well with Devil Dinosaur, because you're choosing between two very, very high-powered fives that both end up being quite large. It works really well. Like, it's a nice, aggressive, big guy deck. You get Arnim Zola, a 6/0. You would need to play Devil Dinosaur alone in a lane. This should work the same way as Black Panther. What's his dumb name? Help me.
Colossus? Wong.
Where you can Arnim Zola and then drop Wong.
Yes.
Drop Devil Dinosaur, then drop Arnim Zola and just get Devil Dinosaurs all over the place.
Possibly. You can also get Wongs all over the place in that situation.
You get both.
You get both.
They're the only two cards in the lane.
Is that how that works? Okay, okay.
I believe so.
Okay. Yeah. I thought you could just get a bunch of Wongs or a bunch of those. No, okay. Cool.
No, you end up with both. It's ridiculous. So you end up with two double Wongs and double Dinosaurs. Wong is stupid. Probably be taken down. You can run Wave, Electro, Lockjaw type cards, which Electro is a 3/2 that gives you plus one energy per turn, but you can only play one card per turn. Lockjaw, who if you play a card at 3/2, if you play a card in Lockjaw's lane, it sort of, the on reveal happens and then it sort of disappears and plays a random card from your deck in that place. And Wave, who's a 3/3, that makes every card cost 4. And those are ways to like aggressively get Devil Dino out and a deck that you want to just mash out a bunch of big stats. You would obviously be playing like one card a turn in any of these decks and just being like, and it's going to be big, deal with it. Mr. Negative makes his base 5/3 become a 3/5, which means that like he's starting with a high, you can play him earlier and he's starting with a higher power. Negative is very cool and a card I'd really like to have. Devil Dino often wins the lane he's in by an awful lot. That ongoing we talked about in Pool 1 comes back here because you can play Devil Dino with a Mega Omega Red. Omega Red is a 4/5 that gives any other lane you're winning plus 4 strength. And lastly, Devil Dino works really well with Quinjet because Quinjet is a 1/2. That makes cards that didn't start in your deck cost one less, which means all the things that like you're using to pump Devil Dino get better. Like your the cards that your Agent 13 or Moon Girl or
Sentinel
or Cable make or White Queen steal all cost one less, which is all like very good because a one cost reduction, as Sarah shows us, as we'll get to shortly, is fantastic. I have Electro and Lockjaw, and none of these other cards. Oh, excuse me, I missed the single best Pool 3 card for Devil Dino, which I do have, Mystique. Mystique is a 3/0 that copies the last ongoing you played. So, even if you don't see the Moon Girl combo, you can play a Devil Dino on 5, then get basically a slightly weaker, exactly 3 strength weaker Devil Dino elsewhere on turn 6 and still have 3 energy worth of plays to make. So, like, there's a lot of good stuff you can do with Devil Dino. It's just the game really goes crazy in terms of power in Pool 3. So I'm not sure Devil Dino is what you want to do, but there are some very, very cool, very powerful things to do.
Yeah, just speaking experientially here, and so this is anecdote, take it for what it is, I have found Devil Dino to be fairly easy to navigate around in Pool 3. I do have some of the build-around cards that build, you know, really strong Pool 3 archetypes, even if I don't have all the pieces to make them their optimized version. So I acknowledge that may be part of why I think of it this way, but I have just found, like, I still run Shang-Chi in Pool 3 right now because I have found there's just so many decks that rely on huge characters that Shang-Chi's value is incredible. There are also ways to steal or turn off ongoing. You have, obviously, Enchantress can still see play. There's a ton of ongoing effects in Pool 3 that you can disrupt. And Rogue lets you steal an ongoing from somebody. And nothing makes a Devil Dino player sadder than all of a sudden your Rogue is big and their Devil Dino is 3 strength. Like, that's just bad news. Your deck probably doesn't have an answer to it. So Devil Dinos can still be good in Pool 3, and particularly early in Pool 3, when you've just added a couple Pool 3 cards to your pool, and people aren't necessarily, unless they've been lucky, building huge, like, build-around Pool 3 type decks. But I think the further you get into Pool 3, the worse Devil Dino gets.
I think that's definitely true, because as I said earlier, I think you could go over the top of Devil Dino, like, you know, like Almzola copying Black Panther into 2 different lanes can, like, go over the top of a lot of Devil Dinos. That's just, like, one example, right? But I still think Dino is a big threat. I think that there's these supplemental pieces that Glazer pointed out, like Mystique and Taskmaster, and these sort of, like, other cards that can really supplement the deck. But I think there's just, like, bigger end games. But I think the big benefit of Devil Dino, though, is even though there are bigger endgames, you still have a solid endgame, right? Like, there's less of a power drop-off in Devil Dino than there's just things that rise above it. So I really want to emphasize, like, if you're one of those people who go into these streamers' Twitch chats and say, I can't win with, you know, all my opponents have these huge Pool 3 cards, I can't win. Sticking with a slightly upgraded version of your Devil Dino deck is going to give you more wins than trying to build a, like, meta deck that you have only a third of the cards, right? Because I think slowly upgrading your Devil Dino deck with the few Pool 3 cards that really improve it and keep it competitive, I think is a great way to start off in Pool 3 versus, like, being like, I opened Magic and I want to play with Magic. Like, that might not be the best way to be able to compete with these destroyer decks with, you know, some of the crazy Almzola or Wong decks, but Devil Dino can, because sometimes your Devil Dino will just be bigger than what they're able to do, right? If you have a really good draw, or sometimes you can win that, you know, you can beat their, you know, you can lose their Wong lane, but the White Tigers go in the wrong direction and your Devil Dino wins that or can beat 4 of the Tigers, right? So I think there's still a lot of play to Devil Dino. And I actually think there's less in my experience. There's a lot of Enchantress, but there's a lot of the Shang-Chi I've found in at least my games in Pool 3. A lot of Enchantress, but, like, not as much Shang-Chi. But that could just be, of course, where I am on the ladder, where my collection level is.
Finding the exact opposite, like Shang-Chi is showing up in, like, 2 out of 3 games, but I'm not seeing, like, any Enchantress anymore. I'm seeing a decent amount of Rogue, but, like, I think people are letting Rogue take Enchantress's place in Pool 3 for curve concerns.
I've never seen that card as well. Played once.
I think Enchantress is enough better that I'm going to stick with Enchantress for as long as I can. 3-1 versus 4-4. I'd rather pay the extra gold and get the extra strength, I think, and then get rid of all ongoings, unless, like, there's a meta call to make. But neither here nor there. I think if you open, like, if your first Pool 3 card is Quinjet or Mystique or Ronin, you're playing some Devil Dino, right? Like, I think a lot of it depends what order. Most of the others, I think we could find something else to do that would be better than just sticking with straight Devil Dino. But, like, I think if your first or for one of your first few Pool 3 cards is one of those, you're just going to end up on Dino.
And also worth noting, related to that, a number of the Pool 3 cards you pull are not going to be good unless you have other pieces around them. There are plenty that you can't just easily slot in. There's an article up on MarvelSnapZone.com that lists 76 beginner decks for starting pool three, and it's a deck for each pool three card when that's the only pool three card you have. I recommend looking at that. That is helpful. But there are some of those decks where even the article there, they're like, yeah, we struggled on this one to find you a deck that was going to be
Giganto.
So I just you pull a card and you can't do much with it. So whatever decks you have had success with in pool two, Devil Dino's the one we talked about today, but if you're winning a lot with move or whatever, stick with it in the early pool three. Like, if you know a deck, don't play around with trying to reinvent the wheel unless you know you get a card that has an archetype associated with it.
Right. Well, like, early on in pool three, I got very lucky, and we'll get there shortly, but I got Patriot fairly early. But early on, like, I was just still winning a ton with a Kazoo that cut all sixes and ran, like, the top end was Blue Marvel, and then Kazar, and then Shang-Chi, and everything else was super cheap. And then I was still just running my pool to move, and they were both completely viable in early pool three. If you can handle either of those reasonably well, you'll be fine. I think Devil Dinosaur, like, again, once you're in pool three, you're running into more of the tech cards that are bad for Devil Dinosaur. Pool two felt like Killmonger was in every deck, right? Because just, like, go away Kazoo. But in pool three, you're just going to face significantly less Killmonger. But, like, because pool three has, like, nine power or more six cost cards, Shang-Chi's value just goes up so much that he starts to be seen more. And, like, I think you just have to be careful of that kind of thing if you're running a straight big guy deck, unless you're doing specific tech things, which is obviously good.
Right, I think that basically covers all we wanted to say about Devil Dino. And hopefully this was helpful to folks as they begin their climb to Pool 1, 2, and the beginning of Pool 3. But we had a few questions that we want to sort of... I got a great transition for this then. We have a few snap questions that we have for one another. Glazer, what are these questions that will sort of bring us to the end for today?
So the first question is, what are the two best build arounds you're using in pool three? What have you been playing? Most of our listeners right now are probably getting to pool three. If you're not, trust me, it happens faster than you think. The global launch was 3 weeks ago, and we're all reasonably far into pool three, right? Was it 3 weeks ago? A month ago? It's hard to tell. Time has lost all meaning. A month ago? Okay, so about a month to get to pool three, and then like 3 months to finish pool three, because pool three is silly. But we're reasonably far into pool three within a month. So if you're early on, as long as you play a lot, like, the only barrier to getting new cards really is just playing a lot, making sure you hit all of your stuff. So we're going to talk a little bit about pool three, and next week we'll do a much deeper dive, I think, into pool three. Okay, so my first two build arounds, the two decks I'm playing basically all the time, and I don't have all the pieces for the T1 versions, are a Sarah deck, and I absolutely love Sarah. I think it's my favorite card in the game right now, and a Patriot deck. Patriot is very fun, and I was lucky enough to also pull a Mystique relatively soon after Patriot, so the deck is really good, but it runs exactly one ongoing most of the time, that ongoing being Patriot himself. So, like, the best versions of it anyway. So, like, either you see those two cards together, or Mystique is literally just, like, a 3-0 that does nothing. So, like, it's less fun because it's a combo deck, and combo has never really been my thing. But Sarah is, like, 18 different mini combos on top of the Angela Bishop shell, which I really, really enjoy. So, that's what I'm doing.
Are you not running Blue Marvel in your version?
I've got versions with Blue Marvel. I've got versions that run Kazar. I've got versions that run neither. I've got like 7 different versions of Patriot stuff. So we'll get to why I don't like it as much in our next question, because I think there's a couple of cards that would really, really make it sing that I don't have yet.
All right. For my part, my two build around cards are Sarah and Dracula. Sarah, Aaron talked about, it's arguably the best card in the entire game. She's super powerful. If Sarah is your first pull three card you pulled, congratulations, you now have a new deck you're playing. There's a Sarah Miracle archetype, they call it, which is a deck that's built really heavy on particularly two cost characters. I don't run any one costs in mine. I know Glazer doesn't in his either. You get Sarah out on turn five, and then your turn six, you can spam characters out that they have not had a chance to respond to. So they may not know exactly where they're going or what you're doing. And every time you draw a new two-cost card that's strong from your pool three collection, the deck gets better. It's just steadily ramps up. Now, I'm also running Dracula in mine. There are versions of it that do, there are versions that don't. Doesn't matter. Point being, my second build-around card goes in both the decks I'm playing right now. Dracula is a 4-cost, 0-strength card that at the end of the game, you discard a card from your hand, and that's Dracula's strength. This is not an on-reveal. It's not an ongoing. This is just a passive on the card. So there is nothing the opponent can do to stop Dracula from doing that. So you can run a discard deck. The first version of it, the easy version, is a discard deck with Apocalypse and America Chavez, where you are trying to get your Apocalypse discarded along the way, and you are trying to empty your hand such that in the last turn, you are either holding only Apocalypse, only America Chavez, or both of them, and either way, you get a big Dracula, and it's cool. Super effective, super easy to do, and doesn't really, again, there, doesn't require many, if any, other pool three cards to make it function right off the bat. So those are the two decks I've been playing. They have both been a blast.
So I just want to note, for those of you who are lucky enough to pull Sarah, Dracula is awesome in the deck. That is one of the key tier one, versions of the deck. But there are other 4-drops that you can run. I've taken to running, for a while, I have a version that is running Warpath, and it's running a 0 Red Skull package with Warpath, and just saying, deal with my 2 giant lanes, have fun. But the version I found the most success with is I'm running Crossbones. Because let me just tell you, if you go Angela Bishop Crossbones, and they don't stop it, that lane is now done. You've won it. And now, your Sarah bomb happening elsewhere is really good. Does that happen every game? No, of course not. If it did, the game, there would be no game, right? But, that there are these combos you can pull up with Sarah just is silly, silly stuff.
For the record, I am running both Shang-Chi and Killmonger in my Sarah deck as well, because Sarah allows you to play multiple tech cards in the same turn. Actually, I believe we could segue into, because Roy is also running a deck.
Wait. I beat a Devil Dinosaur, since it's on our topic earlier. They had clearly the 2 Devil Dinosaur thing going, right? They played Moon Girl, then they dropped a Devil Dinosaur the next turn. So I Shang-Chi'd that one. And then, I waited until turn 6, because there was only one place for them to play the second. I Shang-Chi'd one, and I Enchantress the other, because when they both cost 3, you can do both in a turn. And let me just say, 8 cubes.
Yeah, Shang-Chi is still very useful, and like I said, a tech card. And it's Shang-Chi and Killmonger both being in a deck is great. But you know what's even better than that? Being able to play them both on the same turn on turn 7, which I will throw it to Roy to talk about.
Great. So the card that I've been building around the most is Magic, because my pool 3 pool is very all over the place. It's really kind of, it hasn't coalesced. It's sort of starting to, which we'll talk about the last sort of most recent powerful card I opened that I haven't really had time to super build around yet, but I'm really excited to. but is magic. So magic is a 3-for-5, a 5-for-3, excuse me, that she destroys a location, so she's location control, and the location becomes limbo, so there's 7 turns in the game. And as Chris noted, that lets you do things like play Enchantress and Shang-Chi, or Enchantress Killmonger on the same turn, or Shang-Chi Killmonger on the same turn, right? And my version has a small destroy package that it has Nova and Bucky Barnes and Carnage that sort of can let you like sort of win a lane, and it's running sort of some of the big sort of some chunky folks like Jessica Jones and America, who I think is a very solid finisher in this deck. And I've been really enjoying it because the fact that it can run all 3 of the powerful tech cards and do some really stupid things, like lets you really, really both outplay people, but put people in a tough situation. I mean, it does have some weaknesses. Like, I think it's like a Professor X that you weren't expecting can like really get you. Also, if you like are flipping on turn 6 or 7 first, that can also sometimes get you. And sometimes it's hard to stop that. But I think overall, it's the main deck that when I'm not trying to win locations by less than 10, I've been consistently winning a lot. And I've been really, really enjoying it. And the only pool 3 card I play in it is Magic. Everything else is pool 1 and pool 2, which, you know, makes it really nice. Yes, Aaron.
So just a quick suggestion for win a location by less than 10. Make sure that no one snaps. Play a regular game, make sure that no one snaps, can't tell who's going to win. At about turn 3, as long as you're winning one location by less than 10, just concede. Congratulations, you've won a location by less than 10.
I have considered a great day.
Move on with your life.
There's been times where I've been like, I could just concede here, because it's the last thing I need to do.
I just finished that one in like 5 minutes. My next 2 games, like, negative 2 cubes, got my sweet blue drugs, next.
Yeah. Anyway, and then I recently opened Arrow. I've not played with her much because I was sick this week and only really doing my quests. But like, I've watched a lot of streamers. That's one thing I definitely did this week, was watch a lot of streamers play Snap. And Arrow is busted and is the card that I'm very, very excited to sort of... I think she's the one that's going to start opening my pool up to sort of let me play more than just sort of this really cool Magic control deck, which I'm really excited about because I'm ready for some sort of new play experiences. So sort of going into sort of Thanksgiving week, I'm very excited to have some more opportunities to play with her. So she's the one that I'm like most of these looking forward to.
So a couple notes on, I drew Magic early, so I've also played the control deck that Roy refers to. 2 things. 1, you can add other pool 3 cards to it as you get them. I run Captain Marvel in mine because I like the ability to sometimes, if I fucked up the math, Captain Marvel takes care of that for me.
Still love
which
Carol.
Is great. The second note I want to make, because Roy mentioned a problem with Professor X. My experience is, as I'm getting into pool 3, Professor X shows up more often than he had in the past. So as you move into pool 3, be aware if there's a lane that's entirely empty coming into, say, turn 5 or turn 4 if they have a reducing cost or if one of the locations adds energy. There is a real possibility that lane could get Professor X'd. And if it does, and you hadn't played a card there, you're done. There is nada you can do about it.
So it is really simple to tell usually whether they're looking for X or not, especially because around your level you'll see a lot of the same names. If they're playing Warpath, they're leaving that lane empty on purpose and not Professor Xing. If they're not playing Warpath, they're hoping to draw Professor X or have him, obviously. So plan, you'll be able to plan accordingly. I love seeing Warpath. It just means that I'm focusing on one lane and like making my life easier. And then, like, God forbid I'm running something like a excuse me, what is the name of that stupid card? Green Goblin. And I'll just swing and your aura path is off and you just have negative 3. I'll just win this location with 0 strain. Thank you, though. But, like, Warpath is, what's the word? Good, but makes the game predictable.
Linear. He's a very linear card.
Right. Versus Professor X, who is also linear, but, like, dude, Spider-Man Professor X is nasty.
That,
right?
That, like, is... Ugh, that's gross.
If they don't haven't played in the lane by turn four, you're just like, oh, whatever. And then they drop a Spider-Man there, and you're like, oh, shit. Like, I'm not sure why more Destroyer decks aren't doing that, but, like, I very rarely say Destroyer decks do that. I would 100% be doing that had I the two pool three cards required.
Nova is a good answer to a Professor X'd up lane, though, that the deck does have. That has stolen some games for me. But we should probably move on to our next snap judgment we're going to be offering, which is what's one card that goes in a deck that you really want? And I'll go first here since I sort of did the end. And that is, for me, Magneto. One of the things from this week of watching snap streams why I was like unable to breathe thanks to this congestion was watching people Magneto, folks. And that is some fun shit. And for some reason, I've experienced this, but I've also been watching people play Snap, where Fisk's Tower has been showing up in a lot of my games. And there's nothing sweeter. And having this happen to me, I was like, it happened to me a game yesterday night, where I was like, you know what? That's really annoying, because I thought I had won this game. But I can't hate it, because it's just too sweet. It's just too sweet. So Magneto is probably, besides Destroyer, the card I am most excited to sort of open.
So for me, I'll give you one for each deck that I talked about. So for my Dracula deck, I'm hoping to get Lockjaw. The big tier one archetype around Dracula right now is a Lockjaw Dracula deck. And I have most of the other pieces for it. I just kind of need Lockjaw to finish it up. And then for my Sarah deck, I'd really like Mysterio. He's great with Bishop. He's great for mind games. He's just a terrific, terrific card that I will slot in immediately once I get him.
He's a busted card.
Hey, how much does Kingpin cost?
Three.
He's a three. Fairly certain. Oh, that's really nice. You could potentially Kingpin, Spider-Man, and then Magneto, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's very silly. Sorry, I've got Kingpin and Magneto. I don't have an Arrow. And Arrow is the key piece here. All right. And I don't have Spider-Man. God, I want Spider-Man. All right. There's a lot of cards I want. Whatever. Two cards I want. I really want Mysterio for both Sarah and Patriot. Mysterio, I think, is the key card for both. Mysterio plays three copies, so if you can't play a card, it will just not play the copy, unlike, say, Squirrel Girl. But what that does do is that counts as a boost for Patriot. That counts as three bodies that Sarah is spitting out to really mess with your opponent's math. And lastly, that is phenomenal for Bishop, because that is plus three strength for Bishop, which is just insanity. I think that Bishop combo, because again, I'm like an Angela Bishop aficionado at this point. I think that like combo, like to go Angela Bishop, and then at the end say, by the way, Bishop just got like seven strength, have a great time, is and it'll, like, since it plays the card, that pumps Angela as well. Like, unlike Squirrel Girl, it is very, very cool, and I really want it. The other card I really want is, I would very much like to have Ultron. I think Ultron is really, really cool. I have Patriot, and, my heart would sing if I could go Patriot into Mystique, into Blue Marvel, into Ultron. It would just make my heart very happy just to do that a few times. And, like, given that your decks are so small, which I think is one of the brilliant things about this game, that your deck is 12 cards and you see, I want to say, 9 per game, means that, like, you pull off really cool combos very often. Not every game, so you can't just be like, I do this, and get linear and completely bored, right? But, like, that, you can do that. So I would really, really, really like Patriot. Ultron for Patriot. Okay.
That is so nuts, though, about Mysterio is he's not on revealed. So, like, you can play him into, like, all kinds of stupid, stupid things that you, like, should... That you're like, wait, doesn't Cosmo turn him off? No. Just Yeah. But I think he's actually low-key one of the most busted cards in the game. But anyway, next question for us, and we'll start with you, Aaron, is what card do you really want to try in order to be able to experience a new archetype?
I want Wave, and I don't think Wave is one archetype. I think Wave is like seven archetypes, right? Like, I think Wave goes in Saradex. I think Wave goes in Patriotex. I think Wave lets me play, I've got Lockjaw and Jubilee, I think, and Electro. So I think, like, it lets me do really cool, silly shit with those decks. Like, I think Wave lets me mess around with different types of Black Panther decks. Like, Wave just, I don't have Death yet, but that would be very cool. Wave lets me play really cool Magneto type shit, right? Like, there's no real limit to the complete insanity that Wave allows. Like, I mean, you could literally just go, oh, what's the name of the stupid card? The Scorpion, the one Roy likes. Scorpion into Wave, into Odin, into another six, into another six, right? And then you're like, you gave everyone up every card in their hand negative two strength, which is much, much more than negative one strength, right? And then, like, and you've got three sixes out. And that's just, like, that's silly talk, right? Like, and you built your deck for that, whereas most decks won't. Wave has 1,000 super-duper cool things to do. I want Wave.
Wave's a tremendous card. And as Aaron was saying, it's not just that she creates another archetype. It's that she plugs into a variety of decks and makes them better. So she is just a really good overall card to pull. I also do not have her. Would love to.
She also destroyed my Kazoo deck. Opponent played her on 5 once and was like, why would you do this? It just, all it does is make my Kazoo deck so sad.
It's really bad on turn 5 into Sarah as well. It's like, never mind. Everything costs 3. I guess I get to play 2 cards.
If you recognize that archetype, you should probably.
I mean, 2 cards is better than it would have been otherwise, though. Like, I mean, Wave's a cool card because she's both a disruptive card and a combo card. So that's one of the things that I think is like really cool about her. And I think she's somewhat of a toxic design, but I think she cuts on the side of justice a little bit there versus some other cards.
I'd also like it noted how many of the key cards in this game are just like the stupidest Marvel characters in the world. Like, we've discussed Sarah, Patriot, Wave, and Arrow. Like, the key cards in the game are all these.
I didn't know who any of them... Wave, I knew who Wave was, vaguely. But I had to look up Sarah, who's apparently Angela's wife. One, I didn't know Angela was married.
I didn't know that.
And two, like, she's like an angel or something. It was like, this is like, okay, whatever. I don't understand any of this. And then, yeah, Arrow is like also like a new, like, obscure character from a series that lasted like five issues. So... I mean, I'm glad they've gone with, like, finding as many diverse Marvel characters as they can, but, like, they've definitely scraped the bottom of the barrel for a few. Like, Giganto? Is anyone begging for Giganto? But anyway, Chris.
That should be Thing Fang Foom, just for the record. Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, so, for me, I've had the same card I have wanted as my co-host will be able to tell you, since the middle of pool one. So my build around card that I want to get is Death. I don't play much Destroy as it stands. I am super, super excited to see Death at some point, to work with any number of different Death variant archetypes. She fits into a number of decks as well. More than you might think. Is it perfect? No, it's not going to be fitting into 12 different decks. But there's, you know, 3 or 4 different decks that you can build either with around Death or with Death. And I am super excited to try it, which likely means it will be my last card.
Similar for me would be Destroyer. I think Destroyer is a card that sort of plays to like how I enjoy playing card games in general, because it's such like a combo centric thing that lets you just sort of like go over the top of what your opponent is doing. And that sort of like combo control gameplay is like really what I enjoy a lot. So I'm yeah, that's a card probably, like, if I opened tonight when I do my missions after we finish this, I would probably be, like, staying up too late playing Marvel Snap. So I think that is it for us for the main content of this episode. So we're going to start moving to say goodbye. And as we do, we should probably thank the sort of people who provided some content that has helped sort of keep us on top of this metagame and provide us with deck lists. Aaron?
Sorry. Again, still learning the app. All right. So we got a lot of our deck techs, especially for the Devil Dino stuff, from TLSG, who I mentioned earlier. TLSG is a YouTuber, I believe a Twitch streamer, who has excellent decks and excellent explanations. The other deck we got is from Alexander Kochia, Coccia, another YouTuber who is doing multiple daily videos. The titles are often very clickbaity, like the best thing to do in the world type titles, but the person delivering them is very reasonable. And look, when you're trying to make a living on this, you're going to try and get clicks, right? Mm-hmm. So overall, Alexander Kochia has been very informative and very useful as well. So we strongly, strongly urge all our viewers to go check them out. I'd also like to note, just a editing note, where possible, we're going to be going weekly. We're going to do a longer episode like this every 2 weeks, where we do the whole, like, formal structure, chats, so on. And other weeks, we're just going to do a, like, format light chat about the game. So hopefully you're interested in listening to us a little more often for this.
Yeah, and also we have starting to build up our socials, which is going to be a slow thing over the top of the world, because as we could, Twitter could be dying, like literally stop functioning as we are currently recording this episode. So right now we just have an email, but if you'd like to send us wonderfully beautiful messages that are kind and generous, you can email us at snapjudgmentspodcast@gmail.com. I would make a joke about sort of like, I share Aaron's email here for angry messages, but I won't do that.
Yeah, I would just say in general, if you'd like to flame Glazer, feel free to email as well. If you want to flame me, Roy, save it. We don't really need to see it.
No, my mental health doesn't need it. I'm good at flaming myself. So just think, if you're going to flame me, you could just be like, no, Roy's already done enough in self-inflicted anxiety that anything you say to him is not as bad as somebody thinks of himself. So
we are two teachers and a lawyer. We should all have thicker skin.
We also are going to end all of our episodes with one recommendation that you, our loyal listeners and friends, should check out. So
might we call that props and slops?
Something like that. Lavin, what are you going to suggest here?
Okay, so this week, much of my video game time, and the reason I haven't played quite as much Snap in this past week, other than the last 2 days, is I have been going through God of War Ragnarok, which is the newest God of War game. If you're only familiar with the very old God of War games, know that they did a soft reboot, so to speak, of the series in 2018, I want to say it was, when the new one came out, that, you know, aged up the main character, added a little bit of maturity to the storytelling, which was desperately needed, and is set in the Norse pantheon. Ragnarok is the conclusion to that story that was started in the game in 2018. So if you enjoy sort of action type games with faint RPG elements to them, I've really enjoyed it, so it's worth checking out.
Aaron?
So I haven't gamed at all this week. I referenced earlier I was supposed to be on vacation, where I was going to start gaming again outside of Snap, and the vacation didn't happen. So so much for that. I'll get to it over Thanksgiving break. I will get back to it. And how I'm going to get back to it is on my Steam Deck. I only play JRPGs. I know that's ridiculous to most people, but it's the only thing I really enjoy in gaming. I like the occasional other game, but 90% of my time is JRPGs or things that feel sort of like JRPGs like Hades. So the Steam Deck is the best emulation machine in the world, as far as I'm concerned, at least the best at its price point. You'd probably get better if you're willing to buy one of those $2,000 machines. But for $400, it emulates every system up to PS3, so I have more JRPGs than I can ever play in a lifetime. It's beautiful and wonderful, and I love it dearly. And if it's extremely easy to do. If you have a Steam Deck and you're interested in emulation, please check out, oh my god, what's it called? Brain.
The Steam Deck?
No. The emulation, EMU Deck. If you just Google EMU Deck, it is a front end that if you download it on the deck, you set it to make a bunch of folders, and it will download and set up basically every emulator you need. You'll still need to get some BIOS for a couple of more modern systems, and like you'll have to find your ROMs on through all the various, I'm sure, very legal ways we all do that. But you will quickly have every system from, God, arcade and Atari games to PS3 working on the Steam Deck in one place. And it is beautiful and glorious. And I could not possibly recommend it more highly. I'm not stealing Switch games. I could, but I'm not stealing Switch games on the Steam Deck. However, you can dump your Switch games onto the Steam Deck, and they basically universally run better than they do on Switch.
Well, you should definitely not do that.
Why? It's perfectly legal, as long as you own the game.
Well, anyway, I'm not going to get into the legality of breaking Nintendo's terms of services or not, but speaking of Nintendo, though, because I'm playing this current game, and it's something Aaron is going in, would enjoy, which is Tactics Ogre Reborn, I believe is the sort of tagline. It is a remake of a classic SNES game that was then remade for the PlayStation original, or was it PlayStation 2?
PSP.
PSP, oh wow, even even lower tech. And they've tweaked it again and added full voice acting. It's an excellent, excellent game. If you've played Final Fantasy Tactics or Triangle Strategy, it would probably be the most recent. Obviously, it inspires, but it's before any of those games. So it's very old in that way, right? So but its core gameplay systems, I think, have aged really well. The update has been really good. I will warn people that battles take forever. Which is a bit of its like age, which is something I don't think they can really change without sort of fundamentally changing the gameplay. So you have to be willing to put in 45 minutes for a battle, even like a level up only battle, which is like a little bit tedious in the year of our Lord 2022. But I think the story is excellent. The core systems are really good. This is really 2022 has been the year of the strategy gamer, and maybe even the 2023 might also give us a lot of really good stuff with Fire Emblem Engage coming out in January. So, I can highly recommend it. I'm about like 10 hours in, and I can definitely recommend it if that's a genre you enjoy.
I will back up both my co-hosts here actually, because my plan for gaming over the Thanksgiving holiday when at the family is going to be Tactics Ogre Reborn. On the Switch Deck, or on the Steam Deck, rather.
There we go.
So, both their recommendations, I get to back up here.
That brings us to the end of our second episode here. I want to thank my friends and yours, Chris Lavin and Aaron Glazer, for joining me today. Thank you, gentlemen.
A pleasure. Thanks for having us, Ron.
See you next week,
Aaron,
everybody.
Is currently frozen on our shared Discord-like screen here, so let's hope everything is okay there. And may you all, my friends and our loyal listeners, have a great week. Stay safe and keep on snapping.